Hi, this is Jan Miyasaki, the host of the Wednesday 8 o'clock Buzz. Thank you for tuning into WORT. If you like what you're hearing, please consider making a donation at wortfm.org/donate. And it's 8:31, and joining me by phone is Elizabeth Gautien. She is with the Brennan Center for Justice, where she co-directs the Liberty and National Security Program. She's the author of the Brennan Center Report, The New Era of Secret Law, and co-author of the report, What Went Wrong with the FISA Court, amongst a number of other reports. She's also the author of the chapter Overclassification, Its Causes and Consequences in the book, An Enduring Tension, Balancing National Security and Our Access to Information. And before coming to the Brennan Center, Elizabeth Gautien served as counsel to Senator Russ Feingold, chairman of the Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Hey, Elizabeth Gautien, it's great to have you on. Good to talk with you again.
Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, good morning. Hey, so when I scheduled this, I really wanted to talk about the Inspector General's report, the FBI internal review of the Trump-Russia investigation. And while it didn't expose any political motivations, it did expose weaknesses in the process for obtaining FISA warrants. And, you know, when I was watching this unravel or become exposed in the December hearing, there were a lot of people who didn't know about the FISA warrant process that were really educated. So I thought that was a good thing that they were learning about it. So I just wanted to come back and talk more about that. I know we've talked about it over the years, but it was a time where a lot of folks who didn't understand this ability to surveil American citizens existed.
I agree with you. I think it was a very important education for the public that there is such a thing as a secret court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, often called the FISA Court, that hears applications for warrants to eavesdrop on Americans, to collect their communications, their emails, their phone calls, in order to gather foreign intelligence information. And this process is a very secretive process. The FBI drafts an application or puts together an application to conduct surveillance. They have to show probable cause that the target of surveillance is an agent of a foreign power, which generally means that they're engaged in some form of espionage or something similar. And then the Department of Justice submits the application to the FISA court. It's all, obviously the target of surveillance is not there, is not represented, doesn't have a lawyer involved in the process. It's totally one-sided. The judges in the court hear only from the government, and then this warrant is issued. So it's an extremely powerful tool with very serious impacts for the privacy of Americans, and not just Carter Page. I mean, this is, it's hundreds of Americans who are affected by this every year, most of whom you'll never know their names, and they'll never know. They get no notice that their communications were collected.
So I think for folks who are really beginning to understand what this means, and what happens is that a person who is an American talking to somebody who might be under surveillance, then it opens them up to sort of this surveillance that's unchecked. Is that how it works?
Well, it's an American who is suspected of having some ties to foreign governments that are
so they have
illegal,
to there has
or,
to be some
inappropriate.
There has to be some kind of suspicion. And what's the standard for that? I mean, how high is that standard?
Mm-hmm. It's probable cause, but it's not probable cause that they are committing a crime, which is the standard under normal criminal law. It's probable cause that they have this relationship to a foreign power. So it is a slightly different standard, although it does imply wrongdoing. And here's where it gets interesting, because there are other parts of the law, of FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that make it much easier for the government to get information about Americans, different kinds of information or under different circumstances. So this part of FISA, what's called Title I, where they go to the court and get a warrant, is considered the high watermark of protections for Americans' rights. And it is under this high watermark, with all the protections, the highest level of protection available under FISA, that we learned, because there has to be a probable cause showing, so that's a pretty high level of protection, that we learned that in order to meet this probable cause showing, the FBI distorts facts, omits key information. In one situation, there was an FBI agent who actually altered the content of an email to change what the, you know, to make it 180 degrees different from what the email actually said. And really one of the most important findings that the Inspector General made is that none of this was done. There was no evidence that any of this came from any sort of bias against Trump or against Carter Page, any kind of political bias. And so what that tells us is that this is happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That this is par for the course, and that in this very secretive process where the government knows that there's never going to be any adversarial testing of its submission, so there'll never be anybody on the other side who says, no, wait a minute, that part's not true. In that kind of situation, the FBI is playing a little bit fast and loose with the facts in its warrant application.
And you mentioned that section and that high watermark. There are other sections that I wanted to make sure we, talked about, and that the authorities for some of these are scheduled to expire in March of this year. So I wanted to talk about other FISA authorities.
Right. So there's also Section 215 of the Patriot Act, but that amended a part of FISA to make it much, much easier for the government to obtain Well, it's called the business records provision, but in the law it actually says any tangible thing. So the government can get an order, again from the FISA court, to obtain any tangible thing from a third party, which is generally a company that is holding some records about a person. And the standard for that is not probable cause. The standard is relevance, which is really the lowest standard known in the law. So if the government can convince the FISA court that it has some reason to think that this information or these records or these things, whatever they are somehow relevant to the government's investigation, then the court issues an order and the company or the entity that holds the information or the thing has to turn it over. And so that's really a much lower level of protection. And what we've learned from statistics that have been released by the government over the last few years is that through this provision, and it's a little hard to figure out how this is happening, but through this provision, the government is actually obtaining information about hundreds of thousands of people who are not themselves targets of investigation, of any investigation. And so there's the target of the investigation, and then there are other people whose information is getting swept up. Mm-hmm. In these authorities, presumptively innocent people. And so that is something that Congress has not even begun to grapple with, and really isn't looking at nearly hard enough to figure out how these authorities are being used in a way that has such a broad, unnecessarily broad impact on the privacy of Americans.
And, we've seen this, that particular characteristics in popular culture, but it's still going on. This is a ongoing process of obtaining this data, kind of peripheral data.
They often call it metadata when we're talking about communications information, so information about phone calls, that's called metadata. There was actually a special program within Section 215 that operated under slightly different rules, and that was a program to get phone metadata.
Mm-hmm.
That program was meant to replace the NSA's bulk collection of phone metadata, which we learned about through Edward Snowden's revelations, and then in 2015, Congress said, no, you can't do that anymore. So there was a new program that was meant to be much narrower, and under that program, the government could obtain the phone records of suspected terrorists or anyone in contact with suspected terrorists. And could get all that information sort of on an ongoing basis. Now, what we learned in the past few years is, first of all, that even though this was supposed to replace bulk collection, the NSA over a three-year period collected more than a billion phone records under this provision. And the other thing that came out in 2018 is that the NSA, pretty much throughout this period, at least as far as we know, was collecting a lot of data that it was not authorized to collect under the law. And that was apparently the result of some sort of technical problem in terms of the companies actually providing data they weren't supposed to provide and the NSA not being able to filter that out or at least didn't discover it for a while. And so, you know, some untold number of Americans were affected by this over-collection of information the government wasn't authorized to have, and the NSA couldn't figure out how to fix the problem, just couldn't figure out how to do it. So they stopped the program. And, you know, this is a program that there's absolutely no evidence that it has ever contributed to thwarting any terrorist plot, no evidence of effectiveness in that way. And it's a program that throughout the entire history of its existence was being operated not in compliance with the law. There was over-collection that was happening throughout this period. And yet, so clearly this program needs to end, and it has been stopped by the government voluntarily, but the government is still pushing Congress to not only renew the authority for this program, but to make it permanent.
So the Inspector General report, you say, I guess we would agree, sort of puts this problem into the mainstream. And so what can be done to strengthen the oversight? Should they just not be reauthorized? How do we protect First Amendment rights?
It is a great question. I would say, first of all, that the phone records program under 215 absolutely should not be reauthorized. That should be terminated.
Section 215. Okay.
Under the phone records collection program, because it doesn't work, and it is just a massive violation of Americans' privacy. Beyond that, oversight is very important, but it is not an end in itself. And the oversight can help to detect whether the rules are not being complied with, but if the rules themselves are too permissive, then all of the oversight in the world is not going to fix that problem. So while there are certain ways in which I think oversight can and should be strengthened, including provisions to make the FISA court operate with more accountability and transparency, I think the main thing that Congress needs to do is to narrow the scope of information that the government is entitled to collect in some cases, and in other cases to raise the standard beyond this mere relevant standard, which is so low it's almost meaningless. Essentially, the Congress needs to make it harder for the government to intrude on the privacy of Americans. There needs to be individualized, fact-based reason to suspect criminal activity before the government intrudes on the privacy of Americans.
So I want listeners to, be ready. The reauthorization scheduled to expire in March, so there must be some process that people can have input in.
Yes, and I mean, if this is something that people are concerned about, they should call their representatives in Congress, and they should say, first of all, For when you reauthorize Section 215, do not reauthorize the phone records program. I mean, that is just very, very basic. That program, there's no reason for that program to exist. And just to let their representatives know that they care about their privacy, because I think there's this kind of false sense out there that privacy is really a luxury that nobody cares about anymore. And really, when members hear directly from their constituents, when they get phone calls from their constituents, I can tell you it does make a difference.
I'm speaking with Elizabeth Gauthier. Elizabeth, I know one of the other issues that keep you up at night is executive powers. I don't have much time left, but I'm wondering if there's anything right now that, you know, I haven't seen that you write anything yet about executive powers. Are you writing any piece to look for at the Brennan Center?
I'm sort of constantly writing different things about different aspects of executive powers. I have not had time yet to write about the drone strikes on Soleimani and the president's actions in Iran. But I think that is an excellent example of the executive powers completely out of control, just completely out of control, because that was an act of war. And as an act of war, it should have been authorized by Congress. Under the Constitution, the only situation in which the president does not need advance authorization from Congress is when he is acting to repel a sudden attack or an imminent attack. And there is pretty broad consensus that the evidence of an imminent attack here was razor thin, if it exists at all. You know, to do this without even notifying leadership in Congress before the act, let alone getting Congress's approval, is a grotesque abuse of executive power. And it shows, how far we've come in terms of Congress and the courts ceding powers to the executive branch.
Yes, and we have a Supreme Court that and who've been questioned about executive powers and could likely already have a majority weighed in on this kind of extensive executive power if something were to end up in the Supreme Court. So I know that's a concern for many folks as well. Hey, Elizabeth, it's great to talk with you. You're always so informative. Elizabeth Gauthier, co-directs the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me. Take care.